All right, you're back in the DFSR here with the PGA podcast for Wednesday, April 4th. I'm here with my main man, Chris Durrell. Chris, how's it going?
It's awesome, man. It's Masters Week.
Yeah, tradition unlike any other. We're going to jump on and talk about this weekend's Masters and sort of all the hype and hoopla that comes with the territory. Chris, you know, if you've listened to our PGA or a NASCAR podcast in the past, you know that I tend to come at these sports, I'm going to call them niche sports, even though they're, I mean, mainstream, obviously, but in terms of DFS, the DFS space, I tend to come at these niche sports a little bit more like a beginner with, and have Chris help fill in some of the macro and micro stuff that we like to look for, or then, and especially that he likes to look for in terms of just how he breaks down different plays on a given week. And if you're just tuning into us, we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, or DFSR for short, and you can go over and grab a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. We project baseball, basketball right now going on, football in the fall, and we do optimal lineups for all three of those sports. So if you're just tuning in, go over and check out a free 3-day trial, dfsr.com/MLB. Chris, the Masters, you know, golf, for those that don't follow a ton of golf, golf plays tournaments just about every single weekend. So there's really always golf on, but I guess I'm going to get your bird's eye view. I have a bunch of questions here for this weekend's tournament, but my first one is, for this bird's eye view of the Masters in terms of the DFS space, do you feel like just the way DraftKings runs the million-dollar maker for this, just the hype, the fact that this is appointment television for some people, especially on Sunday, do you feel like it draws in more of the casual DFS player for these big tournaments, or do you find that just you get some of the pros just kind of jamming in more lineups than usual? Like, how do you view how people kind of take to the Masters weekend in terms of DFS?
Yeah, I think it's probably the biggest, well, obviously it's the biggest tournament of the year when you're looking at just PGA from a non-DFS perspective, but even from a DFS perspective, you're going to get a lot of people coming in. Like, for $20, you can get in that Millie Maker and win $1 million. So it's kind of like a lottery ticket. A lot of people will play that never played DFS before, play very minimal, maybe play other sports, and they're just jumping in just because it is the Millie Maker. So to me, especially that Millie Maker contest is going to be a very, very public event and contest on DraftKings this week, for sure, especially on DraftKings. You know, when you're comparing DraftKings and FanDuel, DraftKings obviously the more popular choice for DFS PGA.
And people have been playing NBA, people have been playing MLB, and they offer a lot of qualifier tickets for PGA. I know people kind of get sucked into doing some of those queues, and maybe now they've won their tickets, and maybe PGA isn't their core competency, or maybe they just knew they were going to want a sweat. So I think you even get people that play a lot of DFS that don't have a plan necessarily with PGA, but like the idea. So maybe we're going to throw in some more lineups than usual. So it would seem to me like a week maybe to take advantage, especially if you know about golf and especially if you can break down some of the metrics. And we're going to get into some of those because I have some questions about Augusta in general. We'll talk about some weather. But my first question is, I'm going to call myself just a public golf fan, right? I know the names of the top guys for the most part. But my big question, I think that most people are going to want to know about, is Tiger Woods. So Tiger Woods comes into this week as he's tied with Jordan Spieth at a 10-1 favorite, which is the best overall favorite to win the Masters this weekend. This is coming after some strong finishes. He didn't win the previous tournament. What was the one that he finished second or third in recently? That was a couple weeks ago.
Back-to-back top fives coming in, and a 12th place finish before that. So, yeah, he's coming in with excellent form on this comeback season. So it's really awesome to see. And, I mean, that's going to even draw even more people this year because he's really turned. We've had some huge viewership on Sundays. They've been coming out with some of these TV numbers, and it's amazing. The best they've seen, obviously, since he's been back in the game. And this is his first Masters since 2015. He's only played twice since the start of 2013. I kind of look at 5-year course history on my cheat sheet. So he's played here twice. So it's his first Masters in those 2-3 years. So it's a pretty big event.
Well, I personally tuned in for the one 3 weeks ago where he went into Sunday two shots off the lead, and I don't make golf my appointment television usually, but that seemed like seemed like something worth tuning in for. My question for you is, in terms of him coming in as the overall favorite, do you feel like that is? I mean, you say he's in great form, so that's a good sign. He wouldn't be there. If this has been his first tournament back, he clearly would not be the overall, even with the name Tiger Woods, would not be the tied to be the favorite. So that needs to be some context there. That being said, if this was almost anyone else that had finished with the recent top fives kind of in the last couple weeks, and Do you think that this is it some combination of his name and recent play? Is it more his name driving some of these odds? Is it Vegas wanting to get a little bit more money in here on Tiger and so setting him sort of near the favorites or just kind of making him more of a public play? Like, where do you see this as? Do you see it as a realistic thing that he's tied for as a 10-1 favorite, or, well, he's a 10-1 underdog, but odds on favorite to win? And do you think that's, what do you think it's mostly informed by? Or do you think it's like some combination of just who he is and his recent play?
Yeah, I think kind of Vegas sets it that way, knowing that a lot of bets are going to come in on him. I wouldn't be surprised if he's going to win. I'm not going to be like totally shocked or anything, but he's definitely not my pick to win. I think a top five is definitely up there, but I just don't see him winning. So I think it's more of a public thing, just a lot of bets coming in on him kind of thing. That's the way Vegas kind of works a little bit, especially, you know, that he's coming in with form, because I think you could have got him around 20, maybe even 25-1, you know, 4 or 5 weeks back, maybe even 2 months ago, you know, when he was just kind of coming back into play and playing lots. So as it's got closer and closer, he has become the favorite, you know, week by week. It's gotten, his odds have reduced and reduced. So I myself wouldn't be betting him to win at those kind of numbers. If you got him earlier on, I think that's a nice sharp play, because, you know, he's won 4 times. He comes back here as a 4-time champion. He's got 14 majors under his belt. He's used that distance of his in the past just to, you know, dominate some of these fields. Like, some of these winning scores recently have been around, you know, -9, -9, -10. Outlier, you know, you got Spieth in 2015 that won at -18, which is kind of like a Tiger score. That's kind of how Tiger was winning his Masters back in the day. He had won -18, -16, -12, and -12. So he's all four that he's won, he's been in the double digits. So he's definitely, you know, he's dominated in the past, but I think it's a lot public for sure that his numbers came down that low.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's going to make it for an interesting weekend, especially those first couple days making the cut, where he's going to land. I think you'll see a lot more people even tuning in to those opening rounds than would have usually, knowing that they're going to be sort of cut sweating some of his play. Yeah. Let's get into what you look at for Augusta. So Augusta is one of those rare courses in terms of golf where a lot of tournaments seem tend to move around. Tend to move around, you know, where they're played, and you know, like obviously the U.S. Open, things like that. So at least the majors, and then you have some niche tournaments that tend to stay at the same place. But the Augusta is one of those ones. It seems like we would have something of a sample size, at least on how the course plays and what kind of golfer it favors. So what do you look at when you look at Augusta, and you're trying to evaluate some of the golfers that might stand out on a given week? I know there's more than just course. There's recent play and there's weather factors. We can get into all that. But in terms of just straight up Augusta, what are you looking for here? What are some things that I want to look out for when trying to target golfers specifically for this course?
Yeah, for sure. Like, the Masters is definitely my favorite tournament of the year. You know, just based on, you know, the prestige of Augusta National, it's the only major, like you said, that is played at the same course every year. It's got a long history. It's there, you know, the people that are there watching, they're not called fans, they're called patrons. So, you know, it's got its own prestige and stuff. But what, you know, as a stats junkie, I love it because we got a ton of information to go off of, because it is the only course that's been used. So I guess just looking at the course, it's 7,400 plus yards, par 72. Bent grass greens, going to be very fast. That's one thing they always have. Now, with these greens, they're a little bit bigger, but very undulated. So you may see some of these bigger greens and think, okay, maybe, you know, proximity isn't that big when you're hitting your approach shots. But what a lot of people have said, especially that have been there and actually seen them in person, is that they're, you know, they're multi-leveled. There's a lot of undulation. So hitting the, you may have a big giant green, but the spot that you need to hit, depending on where the pin placement is every day, is huge, and it may be just a small little window. So that really makes proximity something that I'm really looking at this week when you're looking at strokes gained approach, especially because it is a longer course, that proximity from like 175 to 200 and 200 plus yards. So guys that are not just in good form, but have good proximity, you know, longer iron play, I guess you'd say. And then, of course, you're always looking at bombers. Like I said, you got Tiger Woods, who used his distance over the years. Phil Mickelson's a bomber. Rory McIlroy's been good here. Dustin Johnson's got a pretty good record here as well. All bombers. I mean, the short guys can win. Zach Johnson's won here. He's a short hitter. But definitely I lean bombers, especially it's supposed to rain, I think, this morning. So I'm going to kind of be looking to see how much rain they get, kind of look at some reports that way. Because if it is playing a little bit soft, it definitely leans even more to the bomber side of things. And then with those greens, you know, they're shaved banks, so that's kind of famous here at Augusta. And pretty much what that means is if, guys, you're going to hit the green, you're going to have some spin on the ball. You're going to see a lot of golf balls coming off the front of the green because a lot of them are, you know, back to front, kind of slope that way. So you're going to get a lot of balls that are going to run off the green. So one of the other things I'm really looking at is not just the approach. Those are going to be the guys that are going to be the top of the leaderboard that can hit those spots on the greens. But for a lot of golfers, there's going to be a lot of missed greens. So scrambling and strokes getting around the green is going to be big to try and, you know, not get that bogey and double. You guys are going to make bogeys, but looking at making the big numbers, the double and triple bogeys, that scrambling is going to be huge. Especially, you know, looking at the weather on Saturday, we're looking at 15 to 20 mile an hour winds with gusts like up close to around 40 mile an hour. So that's going to be huge, and that's going to, you know, cause a lot less greens to be hit. So scrambling, distance is going to be big, but scrambling, I think, is even more higher up on my list this week, I guess you'd say.
That's really interesting, especially when we had one of our chatters ask about that, about, you know, where the wind stood as opposed to, and I guess, you know, it's funny about wind too, because wind is one of those things that, especially on a golf course, like, you know, if you play football, this is going to be so obvious for people, but I hate to bring probably obvious points to this, and I hope that we have a wide range of listeners who vary between experts about golf and down to like my level or below. But, you know, wind is one of those things where if you play golf before, wind doesn't just blow one direction for you, right? Like wind goes one direction one way when you're on one hole and then back the other way on another, right? So it's
exactly.
So you're not necessarily, so while one, it's, correct me if I'm wrong here, but while you're aided going maybe one direction by being a big hitter, there could be times where that would really hurt you too in terms of just overall club selection. Am I wrong? Like if the wind doesn't necessarily mean you're not always going to have the wind at your back. You're not always going to have the wind at your front. You're going to need to make, so that's what you're saying too about scrambling, right? You're going to probably not be on the fairway as much, and therefore you're going to need to be able to play out of those situations a little bit stronger. Is that what you mean by when you say scrambling?
Yeah, well, scrambling's more around the green. Whether you're on the fairway or not, it's more your second shot. So when you're approaching the green with your approach shots, whether it be your long iron, short irons, with that wind, it's going to be a lot harder to hit the green on your second shot on par fours, third shot on par fives. So there's going to be a lot of balls that are going to be just off the green, in bunkers, you know, in the rough around the greens, and that's where scrambling comes into play. Scrambling is just a stat that we're looking at. How many times when you miss the green in regulation do you get up and down to save par? Which that's going to be big this week, but even more important, like I said, is that not just avoiding bogey, but avoiding double bogey and making, you know, losing two shots to the field kind of thing on those holes. So kind of a combination of strokes gained around the green and scrambling for sure.
Now, does it help with some of the cut line stuff that's going to happen on Saturday after the cut has gone through? Like, are we expecting to see just more of a concentration on some of those better names? I guess you'd always probably see that, but because the weather isn't going to come in until Saturday when the cut has already been made, can we expect to see a lot of the usual names making the cut here, or there's a course still play in a way that we're going to vary very wildly in terms of, you know, you mentioned that the greens are very tough here with those windows on the greens and not being able to possibly putt your way in even if you kind of hit those greens in enough strokes. Do you think that we're going to see the cut have a wide variety of golfers, or do you think it still plays where just the top guys are just the most likely to make it?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the cut, because that's another unique thing this year is the field is very small. I've got 89 players this year, which is a lot smaller than I think it's even back to like 5 or 6 years ago is the smallest field we've had at the Masters. And when you start looking at it, the top 50 in ties are going to make the cut this year. Then you also add in that anyone that's within 10 strokes of the lead also makes the cut. So there's a chance that 50, 55 to 60 golfers are going to make the cut out of 89. So that's, you know, there's not going to be very many players that don't make the cut. You start looking at the bottom of the, you know, the DraftKings field, the guys in the 6K range, because the Masters allows, you know, past champions, stuff like that, you're going to get a lot of guys like Bernhard Langer, you got Angel Cabrera, you got Mike Weir, Marco Mira, Jose Maria Olazabal. A lot of these older guys that are probably, you know, they're not going to make the cut. They're outside 1900 in the world rankings. So what I did this week, I do it on every week, but what I really concentrated on this week was starting at the bottom and just eliminating guys. I think already I've got like 20 to 25 players that are just auto fade just because of that. So, I mean, if there's going to be 60 players, say, that make the cut, and I've already limited 25 off that I really don't think have a chance to make the cut, almost everyone's making the cut. So when playing for DraftKings this week, you're almost going to need, well, 100% you're going to need 6 out of 6 to get through to win a tournament for sure, even to cash in cash games. But you're going to almost need to be perfect, especially like for the Millie Maker. You're going to need the winner. You're probably going to need 2 other players in the top 5. And then your other 3 golfers, you're going to need pretty much all in the top 10. I just don't see a scenario where the winner of the Millie Maker doesn't have all players inside the top 10, or at least 5 of 6 with one just, you know, T12, T15, something like that, just outside the top 10. So it's a very interesting week in that sense that most of the guys, you can kind of almost pick out the guys that aren't going to make the cut right off the bat and start from the bottom and work your way up rather than start at the top and work your way down when narrowing down your player pool.
That's really interesting in terms of just how many guys you're gonna, because it seems like if you are strategic in making your lineups, you are going to walk into Saturday theoretically with every guy still in the field. Yes. For you, right? So which means that it's going to be a don't count your chickens thing, because if we're staring down the field on Saturday of having almost everyone has all their golfers left, then that feels like a lock and change, especially if that weather becomes a huge factor on Saturday. Now, in terms of pricing overall, and we're going to get to some recommended plays here in a second, but in terms of overall pricing, do you find that DraftKings gets a little softer with the pricing for this because they know they're going to be drawing in more of a public DFS player, and they want it maybe behooves them to those players to be able to roster at least a few names that they know, right? Like, there's going to be if you're tuning into the Masters, there's a good chance, and you're playing and you're putting in lineups, there's a good chance that you have some idea at least of the top golfers in golf. Like, you maybe don't understand or know all of the ones as you get further down the chain, but that top group of names, those are elite names, those are kind of household names if you follow. Yep. Sports. Do you think that the DraftKings gets a little softer with the pricing? Do you think they get more aggressive? How do you think they view, or how have you seen the pricing kind of line up here in terms of maybe just your average Joe being able to put together a lineup that on paper looks pretty good? We often talk about sometimes with NBA and MLB, more with NBA on some nights, you say it's going to be hard for you to make a lineup you don't like right now. Like, there's some nights that just line up like that, and that is troublesome sometimes when there's so much good value. Do you feel like it's that kind of week for the Masters with the DraftKings pricing, or do you think they've gotten it tight enough that the average Joe can put something together but still is probably negative EV just because they're not using advanced metrics?
No, 100% they go soft on the pricing, just, especially with that Millie Maker, the 205,000 entries, they want to fill that thing, they don't want any rake. They want to fill that thing so they're not paying any of it, so right, they can get their full rake. But definitely soft. Like, Dustin Johnson on DraftKings is the only player over 11,000, and usually a lot of these top names, almost down to like Jason Day and Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods. Well, not so much Tiger, I guess, yet, but he's approaching that level. Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, they're all 11,000 golfers at other tournaments. So very soft. Like, you can get a lot of guys in that 7-6K range where you can stack 2 of those top names together and make a very comfortable lineup. Like, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter this week, and even myself started making a few lineups. You just see a lot of those memes or GIFs, I guess you could say, where they, every lineup they make, they're just, super happy. This looks awesome with every single lineup. Like you said, you don't make a lineup that you don't like. So with that soft price, and I think that kind of changes your strategy a little bit, because there's going to be a lot of duplicate lineups. And what I think is the best strategy for like the Millie Maker, any of these contests with like 50,000, 100,000, 200,000 entrants, what you want to do to separate yourself is just leave money on the table. Yep. Not just a couple $100, but like $500 to $1,000 in some of these lineups. And then you're differentiating yourself right away, like from 40% to 50% of the field by leaving $800 on the table. So I think that's definitely a way to go if you're playing those big giant contests. Versus myself, I'll be concentrating a lot on the single entry, 3-entry max and 20-entry max tournaments, where you don't have to be as perfect and have to have all 6 guys inside the top 10. Where I don't leave as much money on the table in those contests, just because there's not as many entrants, and you're kind of getting away from the guys that are entering 150 max lineups. A lot of those guys with big giant six-figure bankrolls.
Yeah, that makes sense. And while you were saying that, I was just clicking around to see if I was able to put together a lineup I used a couple of your plays and then just some names that I knew. And even for me, I'm able to get at least to the 5 out of 6 range of, yep, okay, these are golfers that if I'm just using Vegas odds, I can probably put myself within a moderate range of of having a positive expectation. But that's only, but that's really just more speaks to the softness of the pricing, right? It doesn't really speak to like me knowing anything more than being able to look at some odds and maybe just do some mental math on where some of the value lies. Let's talk about some of the golfers that you are targeting this week, with the understanding that we're going to be able to put a lot of these guys into lineups if we want to, and it's just going to be just moving the pieces around in terms of how high we're going to finish. You know, we can maybe we can tier it off by, you know, we talked about Tiger, and you said that it wasn't maybe a guy necessarily you were targeting, but in that top range, where are you looking in terms of top range? Then we can go down some of the salary scale to golfers based on the things that you've seen line up for Augusta and maybe the things that are going to line up this week. You know, you mentioned scrambling and some of the green play. Who are some guys that you're targeting?
Right. So in that top range, kind of looking at the four guys in the 10K range on DraftKings, you got Tiger Woods, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, and Dustin Johnson's the most expensive. I think ownership's going to be a big thing. So in any of these big tournaments, I love Jordan Spieth. He's going to be, he's got a really good track record here at Augusta, 11th, second. He won it in 2015 and second in 2014. He's probably going to be, for sure top three owned. I think Justin Rose down at 9,200 is probably going to be the most owned this week. He's been talked about every podcast I've listened to. He's been on there. He finished second last year to Sergio Garcia. But Dustin Johnson's one that I'm targeting just to kind of get a little bit of a pivot for ownership, because I think with a soft price, and a lot of people are going to go down to Spieth, saving $1,000, because you can build a little bit more of a balanced lineup that way. So I think Dustin Johnson's going to be 10 to 12% less owned than Spieth. He finished fourth and sixth 2016 and 2015. He missed last year because he air quote slipped down the stairs and hurt himself before the Masters. So. And a lot of people are talking about, you look at Augusta, and one of the big narratives here is a right-to-left ball flight, because you've got a lot of dog legs, holes that go from shape right to left. So that favors left-handed golfers who have a natural fade. You got Phil, Bubba, Brian Harman. But then you got guys like Jordan Spieth, who is he likes to hit a draw, and that's kind of what you're looking for from right-handed golfers. But Dustin Johnson, he's a natural fade. So a lot of people talk, maybe downgrade him just a little bit just because of that. But I think a lot of the holes, because you got about 10 of those holes that you're going to be looking at that right-to-left ball flight. So I think Dustin Johnson is going to be a little bit lower on, being 1,000 more than Spieth. So he's one I'm definitely looking at as a pivot option in the bigger tournaments. Single entry, those three entry max, I'm probably going to be building around Jordan Spieth. And then dipping down just into that 9K range a little bit, I like McIlroy. He's finished top 10 here in four straight Masters. He's coming off a win at the Arnold Palmer. On my current form list, I don't really look at the match play. I'm just kind of looking at stroke play, if you're wondering. He's coming off a win in his last stroke play event. Like I said, four straight top 10s. Definitely looking at him. And he doesn't look like he's going to be as popular, just because you look down the list of the 9K golfers. Phil Mickelson's going to be popular, like I said. Lefties at Augusta. He fits that narrative. He's won here. He's got good form this year. His stats are spot on. And then also you got Justin Rose just below that in the low 9K range, and then Paul Casey at 8,800. They're going to soak up a lot of ownership, so I think guys like Rory are going to fit in there. Dustin Johnson at the very top are going to be a little bit lower owned, and guys I'll probably look at in bigger contests. But then, like I said, I've got Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, Justin Rose, Paul Casey, even Sergio Garcia in that 8,600. Marked down as guys that I'm probably going to be looking at more for cash games and those three entry max and single entry tournaments, just to kind of avoid the high ownership, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that makes sense too. I like, and golf is one of those ones that you can avoid high ownership. It would seem the variance in golf seems to be as much as you'll see in really any other sport. Now, over the aggregate, you're going to get the Jordan Spieths of the world. They're just going to win more, and Dustin Johnsons are just going to win more. But sort of like in baseball, there can be nights where you just don't play Mike Trout's the best hitter in baseball. You don't need to play Mike Trout every night. There are going to be nights where he's just not going to perform as well, unlike maybe a basketball lineup, just because the standard deviation is just so much lower. My guess is the standard deviation on golfers is enough that you can fade. The fact that on a given tournament, the best odds is 10 to 1 tells you kind of all you need to know about where about how variable golf is just in general. Just because, you know, right now, if you look at basketball, you look at the Warriors as being the favorite to win the championship at like 1 to 1 or something like that, right? Yeah, exactly. And that's like, and that's months away and a 7-game series. So it's, you know, multiple 7-game series. So if you look at that and then you look at this one tournament as a 10 to 1 as the best overall odds, that really tells you all you need to know about just how variable golf is and just maybe how crazy you can get with your lineups, because you maybe just don't need to roster, definitely don't need to roster all these top guys, but you can, and if everyone's going to be making the cut and everyone's going to be maybe sort of in play going into Saturday, you're looking at a scenario where there's just a chance that not any of these golfers finish near the top. Any final thoughts here heading into the Masters? Anything else that you're looking for, maybe waiting on information for anything? Anything else that you just kind of need to see before you set your final lineups? Or do you feel like we have a pretty comprehensive look at what you're looking going into the weekend?
Just kind of narrowing down my player pool. A couple more players I'm looking at. Just maybe, you know, everyone, I kind of go to FanShare Sports is where I go and look at their tag counts. They listen to all the podcasts, look at every article, and they kind of put that all together to see who's been talked about more, and that's kind of where I base my ownership off of. So just a couple guys and a couple other ranges that I'm looking at that may be a little bit lower owned if you're going into the Millie Maker and stuff. Patrick Reed at 7,700, I think, is going to be a nice GPP play. He's got that right to left ball flight for a right-handed golfer, like I talked about, and I think he's missed the cut in two of his last four Masters here, and course history is really big, so I think his ownership's going to be down, but he's coming in with top form. He's got two top tens in his last two tournaments. He's an excellent scrambler and around the green, so that's something I'm really looking at. His accuracy off the tee isn't the greatest, but that is something at Augusta where we can kind of throw that out the window, that accuracy, just because, you know, it's not tall rough. There's some pine straw on the sides and stuff like that, so he should be able to not worry about that, but it's that scrambling that I'm looking at more. And then just going down even further, I really like Brendan Steele at 6,900. I think he's someone that we can build around. Kevin Chappell, I think I liked him a little bit earlier on, but he withdrew from the match play with a little bit of an injury. He's coming off a top 10 last year, so I think he may be a little bit too popular, not knowing enough. So he's kind of one that I'm going to be doing a little bit more research, just kind of see how he's feeling and stuff, see some reports of how he looks in his practice rounds and stuff like that. And then Jimmy Walker I like down at 6,800 as well. He finished 18th last year, top 10 in 2014. Not coming in with the greatest form, so I think that maybe some people getting off him a little bit there. And then one guy that I've kind of been warming up to even lower down is Dylan Fratelli, coming from the European Tour. He's got excellent stats on the European Tour this year and maybe a bit overlooked, but I usually try and find one or two of those guys that coming from the European Tour that may be overlooked, because, I mean, we've seen a couple winners come from over there over the past few years. Danny Willett came and he won a few years ago, so he's one I'm looking at. He's got distance, he's got scrambling game, and he scores well on the par threes, fours, and fives, so definitely one I'm looking at. Other than that, just kind of monitor that weather on Saturday, but overall I pretty much got it all set, just narrowing down my player pool on my target list.
All right, well, I just set my Millie Maker lineup. Woods, McIlroy, Rose, Zach Johnson, Steele, Walker, ship it. All right, we're from Daily Fantasy Daily Fantasy Love Sports. It. Go ahead. How do you like it? Can it win? We have a chance to win here?
You got it. Millions yours, buddy.
DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site, DFSR.com for short. You can follow Chris over at JaegerBomb. Tell me your Twitter again. I know it's JaegerBomb.
At Jaeger_bombs9.
At JaegerBomb underscore. Say it one more time. I screwed it up again.
At Jaeger_bombs9.
I'm a professional, folks. Okay, go and then follow dfsr.com/MLB for that free 3-day trial. I've really blown the final part of this podcast, but hopefully you stuck through till the end to listen to all the good content leading up to it. Buddy, thanks so much. Good luck on the Masters this week, and hope you, if anyone wins the million, I hope it's you.
Right on. Let's crush it.